Messages from the House.
February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 325, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 19, Cost of Emergency Detention and Hospitalization. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, excused 1, conflict 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 324, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 110, Designated Real Estate Agents. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Concurrences. First on those ones that was voted on this morning on members on the committee for House Bill 11, Dockstader, Chair, Burns, and Martin. And on the House Bill 62, Charter School Law Amendments, Co-Chairman Nicholas and Massey. Senator Ross, are you ready on message 319?
I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 319, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 61, Sex Offender Registration. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 319, concurrence request for Senate File 61, sex offender registration, and ask the body to vote no. What the House did was went in on page 3 of the bill and amended a portion of the bill dealing with temporary domicile. And in discussing what they did with the amendment, it was their intent to have us go to a conference committee so that we can work more on a definition of temporary domicile. So a little different way of doing things, but so I'm going to urge you to vote no.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 61, and you've asked to vote no. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt? Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Larson,
no.
Martin,
no.
Massey,
no.
Meyer,
excused.
Nicholas,
excused.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
no.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
no.
Sessions,
no.
Townsend,
Basie? No.
Von Flatron?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 26 no's, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 61. Ross is chairman for the conference committee, Sessions and Tunica. Mr. Vice President, are you ready on message 313? Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Message number 313, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file number 25, District Court's release of information. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, noes 1. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message 313, concurrence request for Senate File 25, District Court's release of information. Members of the Senate, I'm going to ask you to vote aye on this amendment. On second reading in the House, it was a pretty good catch. And having discussed it with the House attorneys also, we actually combine or repeal one section of the law and place it all into another section of the law. In Title VI, which is Crimes and Offenses, there are actually two statutes, 62310 and 62319, that virtually say the same thing. And so rather than having two statutes, we now only have one statute. The intent is exactly the same in terms of release of information does not occur until the district court, until an information is filed in district court. And basically what we do is they just combined it to everything under this article rather than section, and actually got rid of one statute that was duplicative, and it's a pretty good catch. So the intent and everything else is exactly the same as it was when it left the Senate, but cleans up some statutes and makes it a little easier for everybody to understand. So urge you to vote aye.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 25, and you are asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, we will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt? Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer excused, Nicholas excused, Perkins,
aye.
Peterson excused, Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend excused, Vasey,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines,
aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 26 ayes, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 25. Message number 323. Senator Scott, are you ready?
Yes, Mr. President.
Okay, the reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 323, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file number 117, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act eligibility. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 53, noes 7. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Tricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move we concur with the House amendments, and I'm going to ask you to vote no. Mr. President, this is the bill that affects relatively few individuals that deals with eligibility for the Wyoming uninsurable pool and puts people in that have employer-offered coverage in the same situation as people who do not. That is, if the coverage costs more than the uninsurable pool, you can go to the uninsurable pool. The House did two things to it, Mr. President, one of which adds an additional 20% requirement on there that defeats the purpose of the bill, one of which is probably perfectly harmless. There may be a technical question with it, but that half of what they did with the Second Amendment is just a precaution against any overspending. I don't think it'll mean anything, but it certainly doesn't do any harm. But the other amendment is a real problem, and I think, Mr. President, we need to go to conference and see what they're thinking and see if we can work out something on this one. So,
the motion is of the Senate to concur on Senate File 117, and you've been asked to vote no. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey? No. Meyer excused. Nicholas excused. Perkins? Peterson excused. Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend excused. Vasey?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 26 noes, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 117. The conference committees will be Scott, Chairman, Case, and Esquivel. Considerations of bills in general file, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. We are that order of business. Considerations of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Massey.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration this afternoon is House Bill 155. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 155, sponsored by Representative Harshman. Higher Education Matching Funds, an act relating to higher education matching fund programs. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCaria, Jennings, Massey, Von Flatern, Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, moving the Committee of the Whole, rise and report it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 155 and defer to Mr. President, Senator Hines.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman. House Bill 155, while it's quite a few pages, it's pretty simple and direct bill. As you're all probably familiar with, that we have these matching higher education programs that we've put into effect for the community college, for the University of Wyoming, and the university athletic program. And they're set up where donors can donate, and they, by statute, they have a period of time when they have to make these payments. We've changed that for a time or two. And so to get away from that, we're changing this. This bill would change that when a donor make a written commitment, he has 5 years from December 31st of that year to fulfill that commitment. And it would be the same on all three of the programs. The university endowment matching program and the athletic facility program is virtually all spoken for at this point, but there is some outstanding commitments that need to be paid for yet, and this will give them a slight longer period, 5 years from the time they committed. And also in this bill, it will, the money that's in that fund will not revert. It will stay there until the legislature would ask that it would be changed if there is any money that is not committed and being matched. The community college program, as you probably recall, there's no limitation on the amount. The university programs are $25,000 and $50,000 commitments, but the university, the community college, or any amount, and then the state treasurer hold those monies until $10,000 become available, and then they are transferred to the community colleges. They do have about, the report I have, they have about $5 million left for matching funds with some of the community college program. That program had been divided among the community college, and some of them have already have commitments that would match the full funding that was allowed. Each college was allowed $4.5 million, and then there's four, I believe, that are still working on that program. If you have questions, I'll try to answer them. If not, I ask for your support.
Any questions on House Bill 155? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 155, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 155 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 223. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 223, sponsored by Representative Simpson, Bullying Prevention, and Act Relating to Education. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCarrier, Jennings, Massey, Von Flatern, Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report. It do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 223, and there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 223, Standing Committee Amendment 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, line 8.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to deal with the Standing Committee as I walk people through the bill, but first some comments on the bill.
Senator Coe, would you like to move the amendment first?
Yes, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 223.
Thank you.
Members of the Senate, this is a topic that we've had in front of us before. I have to tell you that this time I bring this bill on behalf of the Speaker down the hall to talk about harassment and intimidation, particularly with a new wrinkle to it, and that's electronic harassment. This has become a rather serious problem in our schools. I have a granddaughter who's going through some of it right now in an elementary school up in Park County. We had extensive testimony in the House committee. It was emotional and moving. We had one mother over there testify that got teary-eyed. She has a child who would like to get out of school and not go to school anymore. We had an intern a page intern that's over there working for the speaker from Park County that testified in support of the bill. And the electronic part of harassment or intimidation with what the young people today can do with text messaging and all that sort of thing is just incredible. If you've ever seen young people, they can text like it's nothing. I can't even hardly spell it, let alone do it. But we did have extensive testimony in the House committee and good testimony in the Senate committee on intimidation, harassment, or bullying. So to walk you through the bill, and as I go through, I'll hit on the high points of the Standing Committee Amendment. Bottom of page one, you see what this is going to be called the Safe School Climate Act. I'm going to create new statutes, Wyoming Statute 214311 through 214315. Going over to page two, you see we start the process of definitions, harassment, intimidation, or bullying. What it means exactly, and you'll see there in line seven, any intentional electronic communication. Page nine, you'll see the first part of the Standing Committee Amendment. We go in there and change the language a little bit to read initiated, occurring, or received at school. A reasonable person under this circumstance should know it will have the effect of. That's the first part of the Standing Committee Amendment that you see in page two, line nine. Moving on down, we begin the effects of bullying. A, harming a student physically or emotionally, damaging a student's property. B, insulting or demeaning a student. C, this is where we come to page 2, line 21 of the Standing Committee Amendment. We delete line 21 through the word creates and insert creating. So it reads, creating an intimidating, threatening, or abusive educational environment for a student or a group of students. Through, and then you'll see on page 2, line 24, we insert new language, through sufficiently severe, persistent, or pervasive behavior. Moving over to page 3, we define school, where bullying can occur, classroom, location on school premises, school bus, school-related vehicle, school bus stop or activity, an event sponsored by the school, whether it is not or is held on school premises, and any other program or function where the school is responsible for the child. This act means Wyoming 24311 through 214315 that we've already talked about. What is prohibited exactly when we start talking about harassment, intimidation, and bullying? At the bottom of page 3, you'll see small paragraph, harassment, intimidation, or bullying, or paragraph 2, and here's where we insert some new language. On page 3, line 19, after reprisal, delete the comma, insert an or, and delete or false accusations. So it means reprisal or retaliation against a victim, witness, or person who in good faith, and we delete that in the Standing Committee Amendment, reports information about an act of harassment, intimidation, or bullying. So we continue over into page 4, what else is prohibited? School district responsibility and implementation phase. What the school district has to do. Their responsibility and the implementation of. It says not later than December 31st, 2009. Each school district shall adopt a policy prohibiting harassment, intimidation, or bullying at school. Goes on to talk about who shall be involved in doing that. Paragraph B on page 4. Policy prohibiting harassment, intimidation, or bullying shall include, without limitation, a statement prohibiting harassment. Paragraph 2, a definition of harassment, intimidation, or bullying, which includes, at the minimum, the definition as provided in the statute. Harassment, intimidation, or bullying goes back to the definition. You'll see here in the Standing Committee Amendment on page 4, line 23 and 24, we take out a description of appropriate student behavior. We couldn't really define that, and it was too hard to hit at, so we took that out. Page 5, the consequences and appropriate remedial action, what that'll be. Paragraph 5, the procedures for reporting and documenting acts of harassment. Page 5, paragraph 6, procedures for prompt investigation. Paragraph 7, a statement that prohibits reprisal or retaliation. Paragraph 8, a strategy for protecting a victim from additional harassment. Going over to page 6, paragraph 9 deals with false accusations. Paragraph 10 discusses the district's harassment, intimidation, and bullying process with students. Paragraph 11, a statement of how the policy is to be publicized, including notice. Paragraph C directs the department model policies, provides for teacher preparation, goes on to say that the department will provide training programs to help deal with this. Paragraph, page 7, line D, school district publication of comprehensive rules. Every district has comprehensive rules. This will be included in that. Paragraph E, professional development programs for the professionals in the schools to be able to understand how the program works and what they can do about it. Paragraph F, the school district may establish bullying prevention programs, which may involve the school staff, students, administrators, volunteers, parents, law enforcement, and community. At the bottom of page 7 talks about the civil liability. This article shall not be interpreted to prevent a victim from seeking redress pursuant to any other applicable civil or criminal law. Members of the Senate, that's House Bill 223. I feel it's a good bill. I think it's a bill that's needed. I know we'll have a pretty good discussion about it. I was moved by some of the testimony I received. With that, I'd ask for your support of House Bill 223.
We're on the Standing Committee Amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Scott.
Chairman, I need to ask a question on the bill generally because it will influence how I vote on the Standing Committee Amendment. The question I've got is, you know, everybody's against this. What can the school districts, are there things the school districts can do as a practical matter that really help alleviate the situation? What was the testimony on that? And do any of them involve coercion or punishment of the bully?
Senator DiCaria.
A lot of school districts already have policies on the book, and what this would do, there would be a consequence. You're probably going to have a policy that will spell out what bullying is, and if somebody were to carry that out, what the consequences of that might be. I mean, that could be, I imagine, anything from, you know, early stages to after-school detention, but in severe cases, it could be putting you right into the legal system. You know, so I think there's probably a broad spectrum of consequences that could come from that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. Then I would call the body's attention to one piece of the Standing Committee Amendment. Because if you're going to get into severe consequences, including legal consequences, page 2, line 9, where they insert initiating, okay, that's fine because the person initiating it knows they're at school. So initiating at school, occurring, fine, or received at school. And there's where the question is, where something's received, if you send somebody a text message, you have no idea when they're going to actually open it up and receive it, whether it'll be at school or not at school. And is that particular thing wording going to give us trouble if there are consequences, coercive consequences, for the person that sent the message?
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We wrestled with that quite a bit in the committee, and it's pretty obvious what school hours are. So if you're on the other end sending during school hours and you're not on the school property, you're pretty sure that unless the guy's playing hooky like you are, he's going to be there, or if you're on the school grounds, he's going to be there. It also would take place if you know that, you know, that you're out there. But most of it is that you know the hours of the school. Just so if you send that message during hours of school, you can assume that it's going to be delivered or received during school hours at school. And it is difficult, but I think further to answer your all your question is, you, with this bill, you're not trying to set the rules for them. You're trying to get them to set their policy. So you still have the local control, you still have the local description, and you still have what they're going to do about it there, and that's where it should be taking place. This was a request that was made by education to the State Education Department, I believe, last year. They did a survey. Do you have it in there? A lot of them have it, but a lot of them don't use it. So all this is doing is saying, make sure you have your rules in there. I don't think the amendment's going to change it that much. And I would urge you to support the amendment.
Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Okay. You heard the question. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on House Bill 223? Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's just an overall question as to why we need to have this bill. I'm not in favor of bullying or not, but, I mean, the question is, apparently, most school districts, at least I know my school district, already has an anti-bullying policy and so forth. So all we're telling them is that we want you to go ahead and do rules and so forth and have a policy. Why can't they do that without this bill? It seems that they're already doing it already. I mean, why do we really need to put into statute something that they already have the power to do?
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your school may be doing it, but there's other districts out there that are not doing it. Your school may have a policy, but they don't look at the policy and they don't use the policy. Part of what you see in the bill is that policy has to be published with all the other stuff that, you know, these are the rules of the school, and this is the bully section. Some of the schools are not doing that part so that the bullying section is out there for all the parents to read when the material comes home. So all this does is just kind of put your arm around all the districts in the state and just kind of, well, like the other bill that we worked on, unitizes the bullying so that everybody's got a share in it and everybody's going to treat it essentially the same, but they still have enough local control over it that they can go down and say, here's what we're going to do. But what this bill does is tell them they're going to do it so that it's apparent to everybody that there's an effort being made statewide to get everybody to address this problem.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, why do we need the bill? You know, I was not one that really thought we needed to have a bill like this a couple of years ago. Seriously, it's a serious problem. The districts out there are choosing just, honestly, some of them not to address it. There's not enough teeth out there to say, hey, you have to address this problem. There have been situations across the state where kids have even gone so far as to attempt suicide. They don't want to go to school. Bullying is just incredible what's going on out there. And electronically, it's serious stuff. It's serious stuff. I was not a big supporter of this. We've seen this bill before, maybe not in this form, but the districts, you know, this puts some teeth in it and says to the districts and the department, this is a problem. It's intimidating learning out there for some of our young people. And to see a kid that is bullied, that doesn't even want to go to school, and I've got a granddaughter going through it right now at an elementary school up in Burke County, talk to her. She wants to change schools. She didn't even want to go to school. And with the texting ability that some of these kids have, you know, we talked about this from the good senator from Natrona County, receiving. My district, when I was home over the weekend, I listened to a talk show program when I was leaving there Monday morning, and they had the superintendent on. They're talking about even outlawing or making students turn off their cell phones at school because these kids are so good at them when they want to text somebody. They can do it underneath the desk. They can do it without looking at it. I can't even find on my machine here where you text. I don't know how to do that very well. But I really think it's a needed bill. I really believe in it. I didn't a couple years ago. But I think it's a serious problem out there. And if we can figure out a way to put some teeth in our young people being able to learn better and do better and have success in school, I think we should do it.
We're on House Bill 223. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also like to ask you to vote in favor of this bill. I've got some really personal experience on bullying. The best people to handle the bullying and take care of it, of course, are the teachers, because they're in contact continually all day with the students, and they hear things. And they need this as ammunition to know that their school district has to now back them up if something happens. And it's a terrible thing when nobody will discipline the bullies because their parents are pretty important in the community. And they're afraid. They're scared of them. And so I would ask that you give them this ammunition, give them this backup so that they can do the job and they can help the kids in their school.
Further discussion. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just a few questions on the bill. Is there anything currently in law that stops any school district from having a bullying policy or developing a bullying policy without this legislation? And I'm also curious, on page 6, line 20, 21, lines 20, 21, 22, the department shall provide necessary training programs, technical assistance to districts in carrying out this act. Is there any fiscal note? Is there a cost to this bill? Is there an appropriation? Where's the money coming from to provide this? Is this going to require additional employees to the Department of Education?
Further discussion. Senator DiCaria.
Mr. Chairman, there aren't any laws on the books that prevent this. I mean, some districts, as you've heard in testimony on the floor here, do already have these policies, and a lot of them do have them. So there isn't anything that prevents them from doing that now. As far as the Department of Education, they're just going to make available just some standard verbiage that school districts could use, provide some, you know, expertise to them. But I really don't think, as the testimony in the committee was, in that it was going to add a lot of additional workload as far as the State Department of Education. So that shouldn't be, there really isn't a fiscal note in association with it. They didn't look at it as being that large of a workload in order to carry out this part of the bill.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the department shall provide necessary training programs and technical assistance. That would indicate to me that there, at least a phone number, somebody's got to answer the phone, somebody's got to provide that assistance, somebody has to provide those training programs. Are there just people over at the Department of Education just sitting around waiting for some new program? I thought most of their time was being well spent.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They're already working on this, and they already have a parent liaison. So once this is implemented statewide and all the districts have a policy like this, it also gives them the ability now to where if you're a parent and your child is experiencing this problem, that you can go straight to the parent liaison in the state education department. So it's something that they are working on. It's something that they already have things in place to handle this. So the reason that there's no appropriation or no fiscal note on it is it's a work in progress. The progress is being stopped in the schools that aren't participating. This bill will require them to participate. So that language in their shell is, from the testimony we got, was embraced by the education department to help them get this education and training out to all the districts instead of just a handful.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions about this. I mean, as you look at this bill, and I know back even before the electronic age, we had a daughter that we ended up changing schools just because of bullying when she was in grade school. It wasn't the only reason, but was certainly the main reason that we changed schools. And I guess an observation and two questions. First of all, it seems to me in this electronic age, until we're willing to do those very things that the good senator from Park County talked about, the communication issues and instant messaging and texting, those aren't going to go away. In fact, those are the preeminent instruments of bullying. And unless and until we're willing to do something about that, I don't see where this is going to I'm afraid that this seems like it may be just straightening the deck chairs on the Titanic to some degree. The other, that's the observation. The question I have for you is, ultimately what we do when you look at the title of this, which is the Safe School Climate Act, and then we impose a statutory duty on school districts across the state to create a safe, harassment-free environment. I guess my question was there any discussion, as you talked about this, about the potential that we have now created an additional potential cause of action in the form of a 1983 action or other types of actions where you're denying people their liberty interests or constitutional rights under color of state law, because now you've imposed the duty on the school districts to now provide a safe, harassment-free society or climate in their schools. And so as I think through this, does that create immunity problems? Does that do anything to do we create an additional cause of action as we go down this road? That's what question one. Question two is ultimately when you do this, we say go out and you make the decree, assuming the bill passes, you make the decree, you must now have the safe school climate policies out there. When you do that, ultimately there's no teeth in this. If they don't, what's the significance or what's the effect of this act on school districts who do not comply? Because I didn't see anything in here that created any particular incentive other than basically the decree of the legislature that this be done.
Senator Vasey.
Chairman, and I guess the argument has changed my mind a little. I think I opposed this a couple years ago, but I've got to tell you that if this problem is this prevalent, then you know, I was just only being about half facetious the other day when we talked about reading that the senators needed to get in there. I think I need to commit myself to going to those schools and finding out what's going on. I mean, we all knew what bullying was when we were kids. I mean, you know, and I took some pretty good lickings because I was a appointed enforcer for my friends who they could fight better than I would. I was the one dumb enough to stick my nose into the sixth grader's hand. But when I taught, that was something that was in the College of Education that we went to, and when we student taught, we were to be in the halls, we were to watch what happened at noon, we were to enforce it. And quite frankly, it's a little shameful that we have to pass a state law, and I will support this, to tell schools to take care of their kids. And I think we need to commit ourselves to go in and maybe spend a day, sit down with the superintendent and find out why they can't do this. Maybe spend a little time in the classroom, because I know what's going on. And I sympathize with those kids. I hear it from kids. But I'll tell you, this is somebody needs to put some backbone in these people and say, you've got to stop it. And as an ex-coach, of course, it was very convenient. We had a little place called the coach's office. Never any corporal punish happened in there, but it did have a door. And I can say that. But, you know, you could sit down across the desk and talk reasonably to some kid that was... I did miss a classroom door by about 6 inches with a bully. I went to push him back in the room, and my aim wasn't good, but that was an accident. But I do. It's a serious, serious problem, and you've changed my mind, but I think it maybe behooves us to go pay attention to our schools. This is something that wasn't taught in good schools of education. You were supposed to pay attention to what was going on.
A further discussion. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate those comments by the senator from Carbon County. And it kind of comes to me during this discussion that sometimes maybe this is what we have to do to get a little bit of attention back home. Granted, we've got some school districts doing better than some other school districts, as the senator from Natrona County pointed out. But you know what? That's not good enough. We need them all paying attention to this problem. And it is a problem. I did have one question on page 3 that I've thought about since I sat in on the discussion, and I do applaud the efforts of the Education Committee. I appreciated the opportunity to sit in when this bill was discussed, and I agree with the good chairman that it was very important. In my district back home, we don't have a lot of rural kids, but it looks like we're describing school as covering those rural kids as they stand at a bus stop or as they get on a bus. What I wonder about, we have a lot of kids in our district that walk 10 and 12 and 14 blocks, and I do know, having raised three kids in that district, that a lot of this kind of activity takes place during the to and from, and I guess I would be interested in a discussion about when does school start? At what point would this bill cover some of those kids out there on the sidewalk heading to and from?
Further discussion. Senator Coe.
Chairman, in answer to the good senator from Natrona County, I think once that child goes out the door of his home and is headed for school, that becomes a school-related function. And I think it starts right there on the spot. Now, to try to answer the other good senator from Natrona County, who's a real lawyer, this is a question for the real lawyers, but the last paragraph in the bill, I would draw your attention to, if I remember your question right, 214315, applicability, no civil liability created, immunity. I would ask that the good senator from Natrona County read that, and if that answers any of your questions, particularly the part over on page 8, on line 4, where it says, except that the defense of immunity shall be retained. And I'm not smart enough legally to interpret all that language, but I don't know if that gives you a better feeling about the bill or not, but I would hope it would.
Further discussion. Senator DiCaria.
Chairman, I think the first thing that I have to point out here is sometimes we get into these discussions and we assume that every school in every place is this, you know, is a terrible problem. These are going on. I mean, there are lots of schools that are doing a wonderful job, have policies on the books, take this very, very seriously, and have a wonderful climate for students who come to school. I mean, I know the district that I work in, and especially the building I work in, they take it very, very seriously as a teaching staff, and we think that a kid should be able to come to school and not be afraid to come to school every day. I mean, we think that's just kind of their right, and that's something that should be an expectation. And so we do take it very seriously. And a lot of these policies are just, you know, having that awareness out there that we're not going to put up with some of this stuff. And, you know, sometimes we make it sound like we're going to put people in prison for this. You know, a lot of times it's just you have to talk to people and make them aware of what the expectations are. I mean, a lot of times, you know, it's letting everybody know that those are our expectations. Be in the hall between classes. Make sure that you're in the cafeteria and areas of that, and you just don't tolerate it. Will you completely ever wipe it out? No. I mean, you know, we all know that sometimes you're in the locker room and somebody's going to thump you on top of the head or whatever. You know, those things happen, and I don't think you're ever going to get rid of all of it. But, I mean, I think the point of this is an awareness in a school to try to minimize those effects. Mr. Chairman, I can't speak to the cause of action question, but the other question that was asked by the senator from Natrona County was penalties to school district, and the penalty of the school district, if these are rules and their expectations from the State Department, the penalty for not having one of these policies in place would be loss of accreditation. And so, I mean, there are some consequences for school districts that didn't comply with this. And, Mr. Chairman, I think that was the only other questions I remembered.
We're on House Bill 223. Any further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I've been sitting here and listening to the debate on this bill and been persuaded, and I probably didn't need much persuasion, I've probably known it for nigh on to 60 years, that there was a problem. I think we all of us are in basically the same boat. But what I'm having difficulty with, I think of it, I go home, and I tell somebody, we passed this wonderful bill that deals with this problem we've got in the schools of bullying. And the guy asked me, okay, what's it do that's going to cure the problem? And that's the question I can't answer. You know, I've been listening to the debate, and what I'm struggling with is not should we do something in this area, but what does this bill do that will make the world different? And at the practical level, dealing with the actual bullying that does occur.
Further discussion? Senator Sessions.
Listening to this, and I am aware of the other bills that were before us at different times. I'll tell you what my perception of what I think it does. It says what it does is it says to school board members, it says to administrators, and it says to teachers and to parents that this is an issue that has come before us in the state of Wyoming and has been perceived as a very serious issue. And what we're saying is you will not excuse it. You will not turn your back on it, no matter how difficult it is. And as a parent, you will not get out of it if you're going to go before a school board or an administrator and try to get your child out of it. It says that's the kind of thing it will say, is it's important in this state that this will not occur. And there's too many instances along the road when you become aware that what's happening to this child. There's too many times along the way that people can poo-hoo it, can turn their back on it, can say, I can't do anything about it, or I'm afraid of this parent. They don't say I'm afraid of, but I don't want this parent in my office, or I don't want to upset my principal, or I don't want the principal to think I don't want to upset the school board because if everybody shows up at a school board meeting. But what it does is it says from us to everyone else, the state of Wyoming will not tolerate it, and you'll do your job, and you won't pass it off, and you won't, and it will be taken seriously. So that's how I see it. And with the fine senator from Casper right over here asking about punishment of students, there's punishment around for students in this manner. And if I had my druthers, I'd take the cell phones away, I might add, but that's not my decision. So, but I think it's an important statement to make. Thank
you. Okay, everyone made up their mind? Nope, Senator Nicholas.
Yeah, I come back to what the senator from Casper said, and I don't know about your other communities. I think most of our communities, our school boards have anti-bullying policies. They take this seriously. We have we prohibit discrimination at the state level, and we do it in one paragraph. What I'm struck by this bill is the length it goes to 8 pages to outline each and everything that's going to take place. And there comes a time where you almost take a step back and say, you know, if you want to require a bullying policy, just say adopt a bullying policy, which your school boards, I'm guessing, every school board probably has one. If you just go look at the regulations, they're probably in there. And if they haven't, then tell them to adopt a policy. But as I start looking at the paragraphs that a statement of how the policy is to be publish, you know, you put them in your regulations, and then you enforce it and you educate it. It is interesting to me, of all the things that are important, that this deserves 8 pages of work against some of the things that you just take for granted. I just wonder why the length.
Any further discussion? Senator Coe.
8 pages. Basically, not much is going on out there. It does define everything pretty strictly, and it does take up a lot of space. But in answer to the good senator from my good colleague friend from Natrona County, what does this really do? It sends a strong message out there that we recognize in all 48 districts that this exists. Now, districts have their own policies, and I agree with the good senator from Albany County. Maybe we could just say develop a bullying policy. But I think that's been done already, and nothing really seriously has happened much with that. This, I think, sends a strong message, and I'd ask for your support of House Bill 223.
Any further discussion of the House bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 223, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 223 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 182. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 182, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, low-profit limited liability companies, an act relating to limited liability companies. It was assigned to committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the committee of the whole rise report to do so with a do pass action on House Bill 182. And to explain this bill, I'd like to call on Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, what you have before you with House Bill 182 is the creation of a new type of legal entity in the state of Wyoming. It would be low-profit limited liability companies. Mr. Chairman, this is not to be confused. This is a low-profit by intention and not by accident that you would have a low-profit limited liability company. It comes down to this. Low-profit limited liability companies, let me tell you the vernacular for that will become L3C, not to be confused with the local community college in this area, but that goes by a similar name, but L3C. And what it will do, a couple things. First of all, it's intended to simplify compliance with IRS tax rules and for foundation making program-related investments. This whole thing comes down to this, that ultimately the fourth, believe it or not, the fourth largest sector of industry and business in the state of Wyoming are nonprofits. When you have a program-related investment, you have a substantial foundation that decides that they want to come in and assist on a programmatic basis a local nonprofit in accomplishing whatever the purpose of the nonprofit is. It gives those foundations another method to invest in those socially beneficial causes, and in doing it in a way that creates efficiency and also complies with the IRS tax regulations. The problem is that it's currently very difficult and expensive for nonprofit foundations to make those kind of program-related investments. I can also tell you that trying to make a limited liability company into a nonprofit organization under the current statutory rubric is almost impossible. I tried this for a client about 2 years ago, and you can't get there from here, Mr. Chairman, under the current law. And so ultimately your choice for a nonprofit is essentially to be a nonprofit corporation as opposed to a limited liability company. What this bill can do, or what this type of entity can do to solve this problem, it allows the foundation to invest under rules that follow the exact same rules the IRS has for demanding or seeing if this investment by a foundation qualifies as a program-related investment. This allows these foundations to come in and work with local nonprofits in a way that they can have some input and some equity without necessarily being owners, otherwise investing in and being a part of the actual business itself. This helps investment in the foundation in the L3C count as a program-related investments. It also helps avoid costly negotiations with the IRS. There's already a safe harbor, a model the IRS has kind of blessed. And if you do this and follow into the same pattern with this type of company, then ultimately the approvals become kind of canned. Ultimately, what this is, it just allows the socially beneficial business adventures to come in from out-of-state foundations, bring in money to accomplish social benefits. They're not supported with any type of tax laws from the state, but just provides an opportunity for out-of-state foundations to come in and assist in whatever particular social problems they want to assist with our local nonprofit organizations, and provides a method for that to happen. With that, I'll stand for questions and would encourage your favorable. Well, let me explain the bill, I guess. I better do that. Ultimately, what it does is just goes out and creates this new entity, the low-profit limited liability company, so it will be designated from other types of limited liability companies. If you go to on paragraph 2, line 7 through 12, you're talking about significantly furthers one or more of the charitable or educational purposes within the meaning of section 170C2B of the Internal Revenue Code. That's the long list of charitable, educational, and charitable foundation and purposes for which you can deduct tax deductible contributions for. In addition, if you go to B, again, this is where the nonprofit or low profit is that there's no significant purpose of the entity is the production of income or the appreciation of property. You can provide some significant income. Some nonprofits or low profits might have a continuing profit purpose. For example, a thrift store or something like that can have where they operate a business, but it's for charitable purposes. However, the fact that they do make a profit will not be is not conclusive evidence that they have the profit is their motive. And then, of course, they're prohibited from engaging in the political or legislative purposes that are prohibited under the Internal Revenue Code. The name then would requires that they have specific types of designations so people will know if they're dealing with this type of LLC as opposed to other types of LLCs. And the rest of the bill then is conforming language with the existing LLC statutes. On page 4, the last section there is ultimately talking about if they fail to meet the definitions, how you revoke it, and they lose their forfeiture of authority as an L3C, and how the Secretary of State would go about doing that. Ultimately, in concept, it's a very simple bill in that it just, like I say, creates a variation on the theme of limited liability companies for a very restricted and limited purpose. And with that, I'll stand for questions and ask for your favorable consideration.
We're on House Bill 182. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Mr. Vice President.
Just a question, Mr. Chairman. Sorry to belabor this, but is there a cap or is there anywhere in here, and maybe it's in the IRS statutes or rules or regs, I mean, at what point in time do you potentially go over the threshold in terms of really being a profit LLC? I mean, is there some limits on this? I mean, is 10% income, is that good, too much? I mean, if people are going to donate to perhaps a low profit, you want to make sure that they're going to be able to have their donation be deductible. At what point in time does the low profit become profit?
Further discussion. Senator Perkins.
Ultimately, what you have is you have a whole rubric of IRS regulations that kind of control this area, and that's exactly the purpose for this bill, is that it creates an entity in Wyoming that can be pulled in under this rubric of IRS regulations, which controls the profitability and whether you'd be tax-exempt or not tax-exempt. And so, fortunately, we don't have to have those regulations in our statute because the federal government and the IRS in its infinite wisdom has taken that on themselves.
Any further discussion on this bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 182, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House Bill 182 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 38.
House Bill number 38, sponsored by the Local Government Committee, Fiscal Year for Governmental Entities, and Act Relating to Governmental Entities. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Hey, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Anybody out there like to move the bill? Nobody's from corporations. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report and do so with a favorable recommendation to House Bill 38, Fiscal Year for Governmental Entities. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, and would you read that in?
Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Please.
House Bill number 38, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 10, line 1.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 38. And looking around, I think I'm carrying the bill. Mr. Chairman, this came from your Select Committee on Local Government Financing. It was an excellent committee and did excellent work and got done with its work. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it puts, with a few exceptions, all governmental entities on the same year, July 1st through June 30th. And the reason we got into this is trying to make all the different budgets and the money being spent and the money being received so we could compare it from one entity to the next and try and make it so it's at least somewhat uniform, and actually we came pretty darn close. Parts and parcels of the Wyoming state government will be in it, with a couple exceptions that I'll note later on. It's going to affect a couple towns. Right now there's two towns out of a total of, I think there's 78 towns in the state that will have to switch their books over. There are 79 special districts that will have to switch over out of a total of 634. And now we got two state agencies that we're going to have to look at and do things a little different, and I'll discuss those as we get them. They're the Department of Transportation and the State Bar. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk through the bill very rapidly because the bill looks longer than what it really is, because we have to go into a number of statutes and change when the year starts. If we start on the nuts and bolts of the bill, is on line one, starting in at page one at line 11, 16.4.125, says the for all government entities, the new year starts on July 1st in each year. And that's really the bill in a nutshell. Let me go through, and I'll go very rapidly till I hit the exceptions in Department of Transportation. Over on 2 and 3, we're talking about cities, 91507, cities and special districts. They've got to conform with 16.4.125B. As we go on over, the retirement board, and this is on page 4, starting on line 11, the retirement board for the preparation of the administration and operational budget for the board will start on July 1st. We do allow a little leeway for the retirement board because of tax reasons. We got to give them the option, go calendar year or starting July 1st. And that's for the benefit of our members. But when you read figures on their operation and those kind of things, it will be starting July 1st. But in terms of benefits, because of the tax reasons, they have to have the option to go January 1st. So that's one of the exceptions. But when you're comparing figures, hopefully we'll be all on the same track. The state treasurer and the auditor, when they go in, for all the different agencies that we audit and that we keep track of, they're going to be on a July 1st starting, with a few exceptions, and we'll note those as we go through. District boards, that they're going to do an annual report, and we're going to bring those in. For the going on to page 7, for the property tax, particularly as it applies to those special districts, we're bringing them in because most of them have a mill levy. The budget hearings on the for the county commissioners, again, they're going to be on it. We did not get into changing when the county commissioners hold their budget hearings, which is a month after their fiscal year starts. We thought that was an interesting concept, but it's tradition, and let's hold some of these great traditions we have. Over again on page 8 and top of 9, we're going to bring in community colleges. Okay, on page 9, starting on line 11, and here we're starting to talk about the Department of Transportation. And Department of Transportation, because of the way they're funded, so much of their money comes through the federal government, which is on October 1st. That's the beginning of their fiscal year. So what we did, we reached kind of a compromise with those folks. Up until June 30th, 2012, they can operate on a federal year. That's the October 1st. Thereafter, they have to switch over. Shall operate on a fiscal year of July 1st. About 35 states operate their Department of Transportation on a fiscal year starting July 1st. So it's a mixed bag out there. From the they can operate both starting in 2012. They can go on both a state year and a fiscal year as they determine the most convenient and efficient to complete the federal year commencing October 1st. And quite frankly, the Department of Transportation makes a pretty good case, I think, to stay on the October 1st year. What it does is, if they try and do it on starting the 1st of July, that's right during their construction season. It means they have to go in during the construction season and inventory all those, you know, all the lots, all the storages, all the machinery, all that stuff. They got to break people free during the construction season to go balance their books, if you will. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So we're proceeding very cautiously on that. And in essence, what we did, we said keep both sets of books insofar as practical, and let's see how it works. You know, let's see how we go. We don't want this to be a lesson in inefficiency, and so we're kind of going right down the middle of the road on those folks. And we'll see how that comes out. A couple years from now, we'll have a little better experience on where we're going. Going on to through page 12, again, we're back into districts, and they're putting them back on the year commencing July 1st. There's some repealers in there. Those are cleanup, where it made reference to different a year starting, for example, January 1st, or a year starting April 22nd, or whenever it was. Section 4 is an intent, and this is to let those people scattered out in the districts, particularly special districts. You got to remember, a special district may only meet once in a year, and that's to adopt their budget. So we're letting them know, hey, this thing's coming. We'd like to get you in sync with all the rest of us. I believe, Mr. Chairman, that covers the let me deal specifically with the Standing Committee Amendment, and it's over on page 10. We go in on line 3 for, we go in on the end of that paragraph. And change the 2012 to 2010. So we're just kind of accelerating that. That's the fast pace that the Select Committee on Local Government and Financing operates on. We're kind of hitting warp speed there. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. It's housekeeping, but it's housekeeping so we can use some good analysis on the figures that we get in terms of revenue and expenses for all the various entities of the state. Mr. Chairman, could we get a vote on the Standing Committee Amendment, because we should incorporate that in the bill, and then I'll address any and all questions more or less on the bill.
We're on the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment has passed. Further discussion on the bill, Senator Bebop.
Chairman, just two quick questions. And on the retirement account, and I perfectly understand the calendar year, is a fiscal year. Is there something that may come up? You thought there needed to be that latitude to let them have a different fiscal year than the June 30th fiscal year? Just a question there. And then the other thing on special districts, on the election side, I don't think there is a conflict, but did it create any problems when they're trying to do special district election or tax levies or votes where they have to go to the people to see if that conflicted with that?
Discussion on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Chairman, for the retirement, because of the way retirement, because of the federal tax consequences, we have to leave them the ability to start programs on January 1st, for example. The tax liability for their membership is where that comes in. We've given them some leeway to do that. And I'm trying to think of one. If somebody retires, and I think it goes primarily to their benefits under a retirement plan, they may want that shifted to January 1st, because that's when that individual's tax year starts, and they may want to have that benefit go on. They may retire in September, for example. If you're a teacher, you actually end up retiring in September, but they want that benefit paid the following January 1st. We've said that's okay. There again, we don't want to hurt somebody tax-wise. In terms of the special districts and their mill levies, it won't affect that at all. Their mill levies go on. As you recall, mill levies are levied by the county commission in the respective counties. So they're in sync with that, but their reporting of those revenues has to be in sync starting on July 1st. And so that's, and really it's very few special districts. What they are primarily are older irrigation districts. And the catch-all clause was, until you pay your levy on the irrigation district, we're not going to turn your ditch on. So they like to start their year in May sometimes. It was they're all over the board, but it will pick up. And there's about, I think there's 679 of them, but they're primarily older districts that just were started that way. It was kind of a way to, you know, if you're going to get your irrigating water, got to pay your ditch levy. It had nothing to do with taxes or any of those kind of things. And we're going to ask them to kind of join the we're going to ask them nicely, though, because they carry a big shovel and we know how water gets.
We're on House Bill 38. Any further discussion? Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just another question to follow up what the good Senator from Fremont County talked about. A number of these governmental entities, you know, whether they're cities, towns, fire districts, hospitals, whatever they are, have significant deposits at the local banks. Now, the 1099s that go out, by law, I think, are required to go out on January 1st. How will we deal with that particular situation when it comes to interest earned, for instance, from CDs, when the bank's required to do that on an annual January 1st to December 31st time frame?
Further discussion? Mr. President.
Now, those W-2s, they actually don't have to be out until February, I think. And they'll have time to do that in terms of the interest paid. That's internal bookkeeping. When they start the reporting year for their state, it won't make any difference. That's internal books. We can still make it work. As near as I can tell.
Okay. The other, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I one question I had, and if I followed it correctly, I don't remember the numbers, but there's quite a few either towns or special districts will have to change their bookkeeping. Is this pretty well acceptable, or did you get quite a bit of opposition from these that will have to change?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, specifically in terms of towns, there's only two left. And they're very small towns. One is the county seat for Niobrara County, and one's over in the basin It starts with B and ends with Burlington and has a good ball team. So those are the only two towns that are out there. I don't believe we have any problem with any of the cities or towns. I do mention those 79 small districts. It's going to take some time. We have visited with the Department of Revenue saying, look, these are not your major districts. These are not your hospital districts, the really active one. Many of these districts, like I say, they're quite often, they're tiny little irrigation districts, improvement districts, those kind of people. We have assurances. We're not going to go out and shut them down. We're not going to, you know, be harassing or overbearing. It's going to take some time. The fiscal significance of those 79 districts, quite frankly, is very minimal. It really is. In terms of the dollars, both tax revenue and expenditures in this state, those 79 districts are not significant. We didn't hear from a lot of them. I'm sure a lot of them didn't even know that there was such a thing as the Select Committee on Local Government Financing. If they even knew about us, I'll be very surprised. These are not your active, big-ticket sort of special districts. They are smaller ones. We'll get to them eventually. If it takes a while, it's not going to be any big deal. Financially, it won't make that much difference. But, no, we didn't hear from many of them.
Any further? I'm sorry, Senator.
Came from the Department of Revenue is where it came from. They know they're out there somewhere.
Any further discussion, Senator Nicholas?
Question on the boards. When we passed when the committee adopted the resolution, we also required that the boards adopt our same fiscal year since. And I know that, for example, with the Wyoming State Bar, I heard a complaint that it would drive up their auditing costs because their audits would have to be done in the summer. And they complained that the state bar is their big revenue generation, and it occurs at the end of the fiscal year. Did the state bar get carved out? Did that get addressed? They're still in there, and did any other boards complain at all?
Senator Schiffer.
In reference to the legal people on the floor, I was going to let that kind of slide, but and Select Committee on Local Government Financing, really a good committee, double tough. I mean, we were down in the trenches. But the lawyers whipped us soundly. We backed off, and we're not even going to mess with the lawyers. We feel our reputation is still intact, and no, the state bar is exempt from all of this stuff. And we're all the better for it, including the state bar.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 38, please signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. House Bill 38 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 51. Would a reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 51, sponsored by Representative Bagby. Handicapped motorcycle plates, an act relating to motor vehicles. It was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises, I ask that they do rise with a favorable report on House Bill 51, Handicapped Motorcycle Plates, and to explain this bill, I yield to Senator Vasey.
Senator Vasey.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 51 deals with handicapped motorcycle plates, and before I start on the bill, if I could just set a little scenario about who wants these and who needs these. First, they're people that have a legitimate licenses to drive motorcycles or ride motorcycles. They're also have gone through the the little situation we have to get a handicap plate, the Department of Transportation, and then you have to have a physician. I asked for one. My physician told me I needed a walk, but I was one of the few exemptions. But so this is not a whole special thing, but what happens is that, and I think the best way that one of the people that was interested in this said that, the placards don't really lend themselves too well for a motorcycle. I think he'd lost or had stolen four of them, then the rigmarole going back through and stuff, and in a Wyoming wind, those little placards have a way of leaving, or somebody borrows them from. But so to get into the bill, it on page two, it talks about the department as determined by the department on page eight. The testimony of the Department of Transportation was that this is not a problem. They already have the numbers lined up. They'll put that symbol of access that we have, the international, the little thing that looks like a wheelchair. That would be easy to put on this. They won't have to change numbering. And then on line 9 through 14, it talks about what these plates will look like. They won't be as big as plates on your car. I don't know if they'll be embossed or not, but a special license plate issued for the motorcycle should not be less than 3 inches wide or 6 inches long and shall contain the international symbol of access and appropriate identification, which may be in lieu of the bucking horse and the riders. And that never was on. I don't think that was ever on a motorcycle license. Then it goes through, they applied to the Carbon County, or the county treasurer, for this. It must have been a Freudian slip. They have to have that. And then on page three, only one set, a set for your vehicle, if it's a car or a van, and then one special license plate for the motorcycle. And what it does is just allow them to then be identified as a handicapped rider and have the access to the as a person that drives a car that's handicapped. So I'd be glad to answer any questions. I will say that testimony and the people I've talked to about this, there's some real fertile troops there for the assault on real ID, but I haven't talked to them.
We're on House Bill 51. Any discussion, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to figure out why they need a handicap license plate. Motorcycles can generally park many places vehicles can't in the first place. I'm still trying to figure out why it's required. Plus, the other question is, if I'm handicapped already, what if I have two or three motorcycles, which a number of people have? Why do I only get one set of plates?
Senator Vasey.
Over motorcycled. That's what they asked for. They asked for the one. As far as parking, they have the same issues of parking in a handicapped place that they do, and they shouldn't. I mean, they should be able to park in those handicapped spots. I guess you could squeeze in between two cars or whatever you want to do, but these are truly people that have been through the situation of being declared handicapped and being eligible for handicapped plates. I don't know what the bill says. It says that one set of plates, one for your vehicle, and one special license plate for a motorcycle. So I suppose maybe if they have more than one, they could probably apply for that, but I don't know. Right now, you just get one per motorcycle.
Further discussion. House Bill 51. Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 51, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 51 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 76. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 76, sponsored by Representative Illoway, Election Code Revisions, and Act Relating to Elections. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye. Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 76. Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that the Standing Committee amendment be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill number 76, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engrossed copy. Page 1, lines 8 and 9.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 76. Mr. Chairman, this is some cleanup language in the elections area that came about after our interim work was completed, so it's sponsored by the chairman of my counterpart committee in the other body and myself. Mr. Chairman, the gist of it, if you swing through it, it dealt with some things. There's always things that come up in the elections area, and you always look through and you find more things. But, Mr. Chairman, a key area is on page 3 of the bill, and it carries over from page 2. It's in the section of 22.2.113, and this is what information is made public with regard to election registrations. And we're removing from the information that is kept from being public state-generated unique voter identification numbers. That's page 5, or line 5, page 3. This is a list of everything that's not public. And the reason we have state-generated identification numbers, and they're right there when you go to register or when you go to vote, they check off this number. They indeed are public, but they're not your Social Security number. They're just a unique identifier given by the voter registration system. So they need to be public, Mr. Chairman, and they were inadvertently listed in the things that should not be public, like your Social Security number, your and some other information, Mr. Chairman. Your driver's license number, all those things are not public. If you keep going through the bill, we took out references to justice of the peace. And we allow the secretary, and on page 4, little v, we allow the Secretary of State and the Supreme Court to enter into an agreement to match information in the voter registration with other records in order to provide jury lists. Now, you have to think about jury lists. Jury lists come from two areas. One is a voter registration area, and the other one is driver's license area. And you have to let these things talk to each other so that you can select your jurors. You don't want to have all your jurors be selected from voter registration because people might be disincentivized. And it's a hard word to say right now, but they might be deterred from registering to vote because they're worried they might get on a jury list. So that's not the only place that jury lists are drawn from. You have to be able to coordinate that so you don't have double counting and get the names correct. That's what that's about. Mr. Chairman, the other area, and it's a key part of the Standing Committee Amendment, is that there's this issue with regards to when the national conventions are held and when the people in Wyoming have to provide for the names of the presidential and vice presidential candidates to be on the ballot. If it gets to be too late and they keep trying to move the conventions back closer to the election so that convention pop that you talk about with respect to the media carries forward a little bit more. So the conventions, the national parties are trying to get the conventions of both major parties a little bit later in the year every year. Well, it's running into a deadline that causes a problem in Wyoming where you can't certify the candidate before the convention is held. So, in other words, we might end up having to certify a candidate before the convention. And that's where this amendment came in on page 5, and you can see the new language. And basically this says that if we don't have a named national candidate, it's going to go on the ballot as the candidate of that particular party. The XYZ party candidate or the QRST party candidate, Mr. Chairman. Well, the committee really didn't like that. We thought you could end up with one party having a named candidate, someone that has national recognition and their actual surname. The other party would be listed as the XYZ party candidate. We thought that might influence the outcome of an election. So we thought we got to find a better way, and we'll send them back to the drawing board on that. So the essence of the Standing Committee Amendment, one of the key areas, is to delete that requirement from the bill and actually pull that section out of the bill, so we're not going to do that. And I have been in discussions with the Secretary of State's office. We've got 4 years to work this out. There's a couple of
different ideas about how that can occur, and they're working with the Attorney General's office. There may be legislation in subsequent sessions, but right now we're not going to put this in our law if you approve the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, the repealer on the back page, that's with reference to how justices of the peace are elected, and obviously we don't have those anymore, and we don't need to do that. Mr. Chairman, back to the Standing Committee Amendment for a second. There's one other section that I need to talk about. It's a little bit different, and it's on page 4, line 8. And you know, in Wyoming, it is now possible for a person to register to vote before the age of 18, and the gist of what we said was as long as you're going to be 18 when the election occurs. Okay? But that language is a little bit unclear, because if you see it, page 4, lines 7 and 8, it says he will be at least 18 years of age on the day of the next general election. But we got to thinking about it, and prior to the general election, you might have a primary election, you might have a municipal election, so there's a gray area there where a person under 18 is registered to vote. They might be able to vote in these other elections before the age of 18, because they're going to be 18 at the time of the general election. Some confusion in the language, Mr. Chairman, as all that comes about. We suggest an amendment, and it's in your Standing Committee Amendment. It adds, at the end of line 8, provided he shall not be prevented to vote until he has attained the age of 18. Simple amendment. I'd be happy to discuss the Standing Committee Amendment, and I've already discussed the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We're on the amendment. Any questions on the amendment? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on House Bill 76? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 76, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 76 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 79. Would the reading clerk read it?
House Bill number 79, sponsored by Representative Brown, Mortgages, Redemption Period, and Act Relating to Real Estate Mortgages. It was assigned to Committee number 3, Revenue, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer? And we're on Senate File 79, or excuse me, House Bill 79.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a favorable reaction to House Bill 79, Mortgage Redemption Period, and I will yield to the Vice President of the Senate.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Move that when the committee will rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 79, Mortgages Redemption. This is just a little cleanup bill that makes it specific on page 2 of this bill. What you don't see in this bill is paragraph B in 118-103, which deals with agricultural real estate. The redemption period in agricultural real estate is 12 months. And it's not. It was vague as to whether or not when we went in and created the 80 acre agricultural real estate, 80 acres lying outside the exterior boundaries of the city, that we just wanted to make sure it was clear that the redemption period for this period of time after foreclosure is 12 months, same as in paragraph B of this statute. Urge your favorable consideration.
We're on House Bill 79. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 79, please signify by saying aye. All those opposed, no. House Bill 79 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 119. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 119, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Genetic and Metabolic Disease Programs, and Act Relating to Genetic and Metabolic Diseases. It was signed to Committee 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 119 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 119, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Engrossed Copy, page 1, line 3.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I yield to the Senate co-sponsor, Senator Hastert, to explain both the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 119 deals with the genetic and metabolic disease programs, and just go over the bill a little bit here. Right now, all these testings are done in Colorado, and our contract is up in 2 years. And with that, we're looking at possibly doing a lot of these testings here in Wyoming. And the department is a little bit out of statutory authority in some of what they're doing. They're doing a lot of this already. They can test for up to 75 different genetic diseases. And what we have done here is just give them the statutory authority that they need. And also on page 2, the new language there, we are one of only 3 states that don't mandate the tests. We're only one of 3 states that have the opt-out provisions in there. And with that, we are just mandating, and what the department already does, but we're mandating that the people have an informed decision. So we are one of the few states that allows for parents to opt out of the programs, but then provides for that they have the information to make the informed decisions. It's basically things that are going on. The department did say that they are out of statutory authority. This sort of just puts into law what they're doing, and also provides the ability for when the state of Wyoming turns that over in a couple of years, the possibility of doing the tests, and we're looking at doing that, as it would save considerable money if we did the testing ourselves instead of contracting it out. So that's essentially what the bill does, Mr. Chairman. And the amendment is a little bit of cleanup. Instead of being specific to any particular disease, we're just basically deleting the PKU out of the bill. And so, and a little bit of cleanup language there on the bill, removing the PKU and also deleting the requirement for the amended date not later than July 1st, 2009. It was the feeling in committee that it was just the necessary language of implementation of the statute as amended and not putting a date in there. So, Mr. Chairman, that's basically what the amendment does, and I'll stand for questions on the amendment.
We're on the amendment. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. The amendment is passed. We're back on the bill. Any further questions on House Bill 119? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 119, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 119 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 164.
House Bill number 164, sponsored by Representative Simpson, Prescription Drug Fraud Felony and Act Relating to Controlled Substances. It was referred to Committee number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 164. There is a standing committee amendment. It has to be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 164, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Engrossed Copy, page 1, line 9.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment for a discussion of the bill and the amendment. Yield to Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
Why do you do it? Let me do it. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 164 is a prescription fraud, drug fraud felony. No session would be complete without coming to you with a new felony, and so we provided this opportunity for you. What we're really doing in this is ultimately there's been a rash of one of the increasing things, and the testimony we had in committee was one of the increasing side effects of the successful battle and education program on meth is that ultimately you've seen a significant uptick in prescription drug fraud. What you have is all kinds of people. You may have read recently in the Casper Star Tribune about a certain official in there, and if you looked and saw the amounts of quantities of prescription drugs that he had. And ultimately, it's become a big deal where you have essentially a large trafficking now in drugs that are obtained through prescription fraud and peddled to other individuals. Testimony was also in part of one of the things that they call them. I don't remember what the term was, but ultimately, what are they? Skittle parties, where ultimately you come and you abscond or you've defrauded or you've otherwise stolen prescription medications. You pour them all in a bowl. And then oftentimes with alcohol chasers, you take a handful and pop them in with an alcohol chaser and see what happens. Ultimately, the long story short is it's a dramatically increasing problem. Ultimately, the success in other drug education programs and drug intervention efforts have resulted in an uptick in this. What this bill does is ultimately, if you go to it, the meat of it is on page 2. Simply provides that if you alter or forge a prescription or written order for a controlled substance, that ultimately that becomes a felony. And you see the effects are 10 and 10 for not more than 10 years and not a fine of not more than $10,000 or both. What we did is we had significant discussion in there in the committee about what would happen on how and if this should apply to everybody in every circumstance. And ultimately what we had in our committee bill is which I don't seem to have a copy of the committee amendment right now, but ultimately what the committee amendment did was it simply took and provided under the there's two sections, section 357.1031 and 357.1033 or especially 1033 allows you to basically have a conviction. You can have a deferred conviction, and if you meet the terms of probation, then that record is expunged. So you could have under circumstances where the judge and the prosecutor and the defense agree that it was warranted, you could have a situation where you could have a deferred prosecution or delayed entry of prosecution, and after you complete your period of probation, that felony would be expunged, and so you could have basically one kind of free bite at the apple on that. Under those circumstances. But other than those, which is what the Standing Committee Amendment does, so it provides some additional discretion to downgrade that from a felony to something else or something lesser. And so with that explanation, I'd go ahead and move the amendment.
It's already been moved.
Okay, and then I'd request for either stand for questions on the amendment or ask that we have your approval on that at this point.
Okay, we're on the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on House Bill 164?
Mr. Chairman, that completes the explanation, and we'll stand for questions.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm reading the statute right here. The current punishment for that is 5 years or $10,000, and so essentially all we're doing is going to a 10-year and $10,000. Is that essentially what we're doing here?
Any discussion? Any answer to that question? Senator Perkins.
Actually, I think the way the statute reads right now is it's only a misdemeanor and can only be a misdemeanor, and therein lies the problem.
Any further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, there's a number of different levels of prescription drugs, and I guess they're all controlled substances. Does this apply just to the psychoactive drugs and the painkillers that can be readily abused, or does it apply to, you know, blood pressure medication, a number of the diabetes drugs, things like Viagra, all those kind of things that don't have some of the abuse potentials that the more serious painkiller and other drugs have? Is there some distinction there?
Senator Perkins.
No, there's not. It's all controlled substances, all controlled substances, and you bring up a very good point, but the other side of that matter is even, no, I guess we won't go on that particular commercial, but there is a condition which if lasts more than 4 hours, you should consult your physician immediately. But ultimately what that is that's a vasodilator. And the point of this is that even drugs that with heart medication or other things, if they're with the side effects or the combination with other drugs, can be deadly. And that's the point of this, is two things. Is one, it's not just taking that or stealing it out of your mom or dad's medicine cabinet or something like that. What you've done is you've actually taken and altered a prescription. And you've either forged it or you've altered it with respect to do that. And when you look at that and the interaction with other drugs, it has potential for even drugs that we might think could be innocuous to actually be deadly. And therein lies the problem.
Further discussion, Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I probably should know this, but before we put another felony on the books, I'm just curious. The senator from Goshen County touched on it, but what is the maximum penalty that can be put on somebody currently today?
Any answer to that question? Senator Perkins.
I believe it's a misdemeanor, so I'm not sure if it's 6 months or 1 year, but yeah. I believe it's 6 months or 1 year. Mr. Chairman, one of the other things that I would bring is this actually isn't quite a new felony. A few years ago, or I think it was just last in the, if you go back, ultimately this used to be a felony. And then when we did some amendments and some readjustment of the statutes, and kind of inadvertently this got downgraded to a misdemeanor. And so actually what this bill does is moves it back into the felony range.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, reading this through, you've got a misdemeanor on the first offense up to 6 months. Second offense, it's 1 year or 1,000 or both. And third offense is 10 years or 10,000 or both. And that's a violation of paragraph A3, little I, of section 357.1033. So we've got some, I don't see repealers or strikeouts. So I would say that even if this passes, the judge would have the ability to apply the fine or the conviction or the sentence that would be the lesser of. So I think if it's really the intent for the first offense to be 10 years or $10,000, that the sponsor would have to go into 357.1033 and do some deletions. And I'm not really sure if that's where we want to go. We've got quite a little bit of flexibility, it looks like, right now in that particular section. But I think that probably if that's exactly what you want, the first time you either get a total deferment or you get 10 years in jail, up to 10 years in jail, then I guess go ahead and support the bill.
Any further discussion? Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, as I'm reading this, it reminds me that I heard that the drugs of choice for junior high students is marijuana and prescription drugs. And I'm assuming this applies to adults. If I'm wrong, what is the penalty for the junior high students to get caught, since they're the ones actually participating in this and they're stealing out of their parents' medicine cabinet?
Further discussion of the bill? Okay. Further discussion. Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, just in answer to the good senator behind me, what this does, ultimately, I think if you look at that, ultimately, this is only chargeable as a misdemeanor at this point in time. This does make it for a felony. His interpretation is right. This bill would make it, it's kind of binary. You either have a deferred prosecution or you have a felony, but also would point out that it's not a mandatory minimum. It's a maximum of 10 years or $10,000 or both, and in concert with the rest of where we've gone in the last few years, there's no bottom end on this. There's no mandatory minimum. So the judge has the ability to charge appropriately. There was a significant discussion about the difference between changing seven on a prescription, seven pills to nine pills. That's not the issue, and obviously those types of people you'd want to catch out. But the testimony has been that this has now become a significant form of drug trafficking and distribution, and that it needs to be addressed appropriately. And also the fact that when you go, it's really you're in the context of committing two crimes. It's not just possession. It's not just that you have it, but this is actually you've gone out and manipulated a system. You've manipulated a system and if you go and look, I think if you look at our check fraud statutes, I don't think there's some definition, but ultimately, basically with the check fraud, once it's over $500 on check fraud, it's a felony with the same penalties. So when you look at that, there is substantial discretion there, but the feeding of the sponsor and the general agreement of the committee was that this is a different kind of crime because it is a forgery, because it's a defalcation, and ultimately it's not only assault upon the person, but it's assault upon the medical delivery system for controlled substances, and it needs to be inviolate, and that's why the feeling was that this type of sentence availability was important.
Further discussion on House Bill 164. Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to puzzle this thing through, and you look at what we've got in the bill. Just looking at the provisions here, looking at bottom page one, lawful for any person to knowingly or intentionally, three, acquire, obtain possession of, administration, controlled substance, or obtain a prescription for any controlled substance by misrepresentation, fraud, deception, subterfuge, and that is, as I read the statute as it's printed, any person violates a section guilty of a crime and conviction may be imprisoned for not more than 5 years. Mr. Chairman, I'm having difficulty seeing what this bill does, because it seems to me that the existing language you see reproduced at the top of page 2 ought to cover forging a prescription. And I'm having a great deal of difficulty understanding how this bill does anything meaningful that's different and isn't just cluttering the statutes up. Prohibiting something that's already prohibited and is already a felony.
Further discussion on House Bill 164. Further discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor of the Vice President's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 164 passes, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
House Bill 164 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion is passed. Mr. President.
Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had on consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 60, do pass amended. House Bill 150, do pass. House Bill 113, do pass. House Bill 78, do pass. House Bill 8, do pass amended. House Bill 221, do pass. House Bill 72, do pass amended. House Bill 74, do pass. House Bill 135, do pass. House Bill 137, do pass. House Bill 106, do pass. House Bill 138, do pass amended. House Bill 155, do pass. House Bill 223, do pass amended. House Bill 182, do pass. House Bill 38, do pass amended. House Bill 51, do pass. House Bill 76, do pass amended. House Bill 79, do pass. House Bill 119, do pass amended. And House Bill 164, do pass amended. Senator Massey, Chairman.
Senator Massey.
Mr. President, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
As opposed, no. Motion carried and the report had been adopted. We have a concurrence report. Senator Bebout, are you ready on message 324? Is reading clerk, please read it in.
February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 324, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 110, designated real estate agents. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move message number 324, concurrence requested on Senate file 110, and ask the senators to vote aye. Mr. President, what the House did, they had two amendments that they put on the bill. If you look at your engrossed copy on page 3, it's under the customer section part of the bill that we added, something we had not done before in our real estate law. And the language they deleted was a buyer's intent to occupy the property as a principal residence under disclosure of a prospective seller on all adverse material facts. The House didn't feel like that could be something that would be defined, particularly the word intent, and I happen to agree with them. I think it makes it better. The second thing they did, Mr. President, if you look in the engrossed copy and go to page 11, we had some good discussion about the responsible broker and some immunity issues that we took care of when we put in the a committee amendment on J on pages 11, 9 through 21. However, what we did with that amendment, we prohibited a responsible broker from being an agent with the language. In Wyoming, we have small realtors and the agents, and they wanted to have the responsible broker be able to be an agent. However, if you look at the amendment, they said it goes further to say if the responsible broker is representing a buyer or seller in an in-house transaction, the broker shall immediately appoint a transaction manager. And the definition of transaction manager, if you look at that once again, Mr. President, it means a licensee designated in writing by the responsible broker to supervise the transaction. So I think we've taken care of the concerns that were brought to the body about the liability issue, and I think these two amendments make it a better bill. I would ask for your concurrence.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 110 and vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case. Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, excused, Dockstader, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
No.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Vasey.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 24 ayes, 5 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 110. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock a.m.
Announcement, Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock over here in S11 to hear House Bill 258, Charter Schools Funding, House Bill 255, and Grow School District's Kindergarten Programs, House Bill 236, and Grow School Finance Instructional Facilitator Program, and if time permits, House Bill 248 engross school facilities remedy criteria.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, in 10 minutes in S13, we will meet to review House Bill 125, Establishment of Highways, and House Bill 183, Military Tuition Assistance.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet Thursday night upon adjournment in S-15, and we're going to take up House Bill 213, Rangeland Monitoring.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow, 20 minutes after the noon recess, up in S-14, where we will deal with House Bill 286, engrossed Federal Natural Resources Policy Account, House Bill 302, engrossed Game and Fish Pioneer Fishing License, and House Joint Resolution 16, engrossed Immigration Reform.
Senator Nicholas. Did everyone hear? The speaker would not come on. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, will meet Friday, February the 20th at 1 p.m. and 5 to hear the following bills: House Bill 61, engrossed the revised bill; House Bill 127, engrossed obsolete laws, general provisions, and House Bill 160, constituent service allowances. And Mr. President, I have just a moment of privilege to the floor. Please.
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. All I can say about today's work is wow. 22 bills. We will take up early tomorrow, as I've announced in my earlier announcement. You can expect a normal noon and probably an earlier dismissal, somewhat like today or earlier. Friday, a couple things going on in the morning that does not enable us to take up early. Leadership has a meeting, but there's really no need to leave. Gone about it today, so I would expect a 10 o'clock take. take up on Friday, and I would expect the way we're going with these bills that we can have up, what we would consider a very reasonable dismissal on Friday as well. So all I can say, with a good senator from Albany County and the chair, he can do cards faster than some people can make it. We, today, with sports analogies, I would say you get a hole in one. Perhaps you bowl to 300. Or for a baseball player, you probably pitch to no hitter.
You've heard them, Senator Ross. You've heard the motion that the Senate shall adjourn until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, Thursday, February 19. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are adjourned. And nothing is working.